taking a ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. As always, ride with me, my man Patrick Urban and Jamie Bouchon. Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education with in economics with the trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com so you can listen to the playbacks of your favorite shows and, you know, listen to your favorite interviewee. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain. And you can also subscribe to the Freedom Train through Google Play Music or iTunes, and you can follow us, and bam, you ain't got to go looking for the episode because it's going to show right up in your phone. So ride with us. Jamie, Pat, what it is?
What up, fellas?
What it is? Pat, what's going down, man?
Not much. Home life, feel it.
We got to go ahead and get it right from the beginning, you know what I'm saying? We're dropping bombs on them. I just want to do that, though, really.
Right from the get-go?
I just really want to do it. You know, make you feel good, you know.
That's
I feel
cool
good now.
What kind of show we going to have? Because we're going to be kind of all over the place, but at the same time in the same place, if that makes sense.
It do. It do. Like ants.
There you go.
Ants.
What?
They be all over the place, but they be in one place.
Only you, Joe. Only you, right?
Yeah, that's a trippy analogy right there.
Yeah, like nobody else could come up with that but Joseph Ward. There you go.
Hey man, hey man. So I know we've had a lot of stuff happen since the last time we've had our discussion. You know, the three of us. You know, we've had the victory with the I guess you could say the victory with the Dakota Access Pipeline. They've had the resistance against them kind of shut down for a minute. You know, we've seen Jim Brown and Ray Lewis and that one pastor dude meeting with Donald Trump, and all types of stuff. You got activists saying, feminists are saying all types of stuff. Black women still choosing to be feminists even though they've been sold out by white women. So, you know, where to start? Where do we start? Which one y'all want to start? Where y'all want to start?
Man, that's a tough one. We can start with that Jim Brown stuff first, man. Let's knock that out.
With that Jim Brown. All right, for those who don't know, Jim Brown, Ray Lewis, what's the pastor guy name? What's the pastor name?
Reverend Rollo Goodlove.
Okay, well, we're going to call him Reverend Hellon. All right, so Ray Lewis, Jim Brown, and Reverend Hellon, they met, they had this meeting with Donald Trump to talk about, I guess, creating programs to improve the conditions within the black community. And, of course, you know, our eyebrows are raised, red flags are raised, and we questioning, well, why is somebody like Jim Brown meeting with a Donald Trump? You know, like Jim Brown, he got too many years in the game to be meeting with Donald Trump, so what's this all about? So what are you guys' thoughts on this? Are we overblowing this? Are we just jumping to the gun too quick? Or, you know, if our red flags are going off, are they justified? What are y'all's opinions?
Them actually meeting with Donald Trump, that's one thing. Meet with whoever the hell you want to. It was the verbiage they came back with, the way they were talking. And they came back, if you notice, you heard Jim Brown speak and you heard Ray Lewis speak, all they came back with were talking points. They came back with the same exact talking points in absolutely zero detail of how Donald Trump is going to create these businesses, create no detail whatsoever, just selling a bunch of hope that, hey, we're going to turn around, we're going to create this, and he's a great person, this, that, and other, but they could give no details as to what they were going to do to create these jobs in these inner cities. Because anytime they talk, now, black, if you don't stay in the inner city, you're not important in anything black. Because all people care about is the black people that stay in the heart of Chicago, I guess. But it was just the inner cities this, inner cities that. But you got no substance from what they were saying about how it's actually going to be done. So to me, the meeting, that's one thing, whatever, do what you want, but don't come back and try to sell us this bullshit Donald Trump has sold you with. Like, he's using you at that point.
Right. I agree with Jamie on that. Like, for me, I'm not going to call anybody a coon or attack anybody just for having a meeting with somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can meet with the head of the KKK for all I care. But for me, it was really the way they came back and discussed the meeting. You know, the way they tried to pass it off. It almost felt like it wasn't productive, and they knew they were going to be attacked. So they tried to head it off at the pass by making it seem like it was more productive than it was. But even to his point about quote-unquote inner cities, you know, like that, whenever a black person comes back to the community and starts talking that inner city lingo, you know, for me that bothers me too, because less than 40% of black people live in the inner city. And when you use that term to refer to black people, you're kind of like selling out on the stereotype that black people are poor and blah, blah, blah. Look, all black people need help. You know, the system affects all of us, those that are well off and those that are in poverty. And so it's just, it bothers me to my core when black people come and try and sell that inner city talking point and try and make it seem like they're doing something for black people, when we all know that normally these discussions, these meetings, these committees, these things, like Jamie said, they never go past talking. They never go past a meeting. If they do roll out some program, all the benefits get absorbed by people that are supposed to be administering the program, and none of it actually trickles down to, none of those resources actually make it to the community. But in terms of Jim Brown, you know, for me, it's like, we can't keep giving people a pass off things that they did,
right,
10, 20, 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's great. I love that you did that. That is amazing. You know, I respect what you did. But that doesn't mean that I have to respect what you're currently doing because of what you did in the past. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. Now, I guess my stance is, I'm not going to say I'm the history expert for black America. I would never say that. Far from that. But I've read a good amount of history, like over the past 2 years, just with my own Soul's Giant series and just independent reading and just reading through different stories of black people, African people throughout the world, sitting down negotiating with the enemy, sitting down, and we never get what we need. Then it never works out. I haven't come across any instances where we sat down and negotiated and it really worked out for black people. It always seemed to still come back and bite black people in the butt in the end. And with, to me, I am one of the ones who, I'm not going to jump on him for meeting, but I'm questioning why you're meeting. Because I'm sure, like, the idea of self-sufficiency is nowhere in that, man. And Jim Brown been around long enough to know the worth of self-sufficiency. I'm not seeing how we could get to where we need to be as a people by meeting with somebody like Donald Trump, you know. Like, Donald Trump, we know where he's staying. I'm not one of the people that really believe Donald Trump is a blithering idiot. I don't believe that. Ain't no way you can amass that much money and keep that much money and make that much money being an idiot. That just don't happen. So I do understand that Donald Trump playing his part in all these things here, but why are we meeting? I'm like that on one end. Then the same thing on the other end, like you guys, like the outcome of what are the outcomes of the meeting, you know? And then with some of the comments he made, you know, the the most important people in his life were white people. Well, dang, like, so black people had no, like, black people ain't help no way, no how. Like, what about before white people accepted you?
Mm. And that's what, that, now that's one thing I did want to speak to. That comment in particular is enough to make me side eye you. I don't care what you've done. Because, I mean, your mama, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right. School, like, teachers, when you in school, was segregated.
Right. Like you sitting here telling me that there are no black people in your life that crack the top three? Really? Like, unless you can say you were Barack Obama, who, you know, you were raised by a white family in an all-white neighborhood and blah, blah, you went to all-white school. Like, unless that's your story, something ain't right about that. And in terms of Jim Brown, we know that that's not his story.
Right.
And I think because he was an athlete, man. Not only that, he was an amazing athlete. He was a great talent. So once that talent was, you know, everybody saw that talent, that potential in him, of course people started liking him and treating him different.
Right.
And that's why he may have that perception of them. So I took that into consideration. That comment was, I mean, like, nobody? Nobody you grew up with cracked your top three, man.
Right.
Like, yo, that's like, yo, your top five don't even include Biggie and Tupac. Like, get out of here, man. Come on. Like, yo, no black person in your whole entire life cracked your top three?
Now you, I mean, like, it's like, so, like, what type of childhood did you have?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, was he just, like, running the ball straight from the age one till adulthood? Like, everybody, like, oh, he going to go to the NFL one day. Like, did they know that at one and some white people just took him and that's all he knew? Like, how do you know all these? He was in the original Gangsters, for crying out loud. Come on, dog. You come on, top three. Get out of here.
I mean, I just don't. I don't know, man. But then the other question is, the other question for me is, okay, so where were you when Obama was in office?
I got an even better question than that, because Jim Brown retired in what, the '50s and the '60s. He retired from football then, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So how many presidents? Let's give him 1960. How many presidents? How many presidents have we had since 1960 till now?
Shit, I ain't doing math tonight, Joe. Like, what,
but
the
you,
fuck,
you, I'm, all I'm saying is you missed a lot of meetings.
Right. Yeah. No, I guess you.
To that point,
that's perfectly right. Like, come on, man. Like, so out of all the presidents that you could have worked with, I mean, you could have worked with GW, for crying out loud. It's just like, you know what? Let me go mess with Donald Trump. And the whole the conduit for all of this was that pastor dude, the one who has no idea what's going on. He's the one bringing in these
right
people.
Reverend Hellone.
Now, yeah, Reverend Rollo Goodlove is bringing in all these people. And Ray Lewis, like, he, like, I, like, from, okay, here's my thing, and I'm going to say this.
Idiot.
We talked about, yes, Pat talked about this a few shows ago. There's levels to this. At the end of the day, Jim Brown or Ray Lewis should not be talking on the behalf of any black community. We have actual scholars who've dedicated their whole lives, who have actual plans, who have actual things they could bring to the table versus a bunch of rhetoric and hope. They need
right.
to be sitting at the table in these meetings. Not a retired. These dudes are retired football players. Like, give me a break. Like, I know they have a wealth of knowledge. Jim Brown did a lot of stuff. But if you want to talk about finance and you need to get Dr. Claude Anderson.
But
Dr.
guess
Boyd
what?
Watkins up there.
But let me ask this. How is Jim Brown any different from, let's say, Coach Eddie, remember, Jamie, you played football. Remember Jack Gaither Giants, right here in Tallahassee?
Yeah.
Guy, Coach Eddie. How is Jim Brown any different from Coach Eddie? Coach Eddie been doing the same thing since Jim Brown, but nobody going to send Coach Eddie up to City Hall to speak on behalf of black people. They going to send an actual scholar.
My point exactly. And for me, I think a lot of black people, they saw that, oh, man, we got hope, man, he's willing to work with us. These aren't the people that are versed to, you know, address the issues that are facing the black community in America. Ray Lewis just isn't it. Well, he's going to give a good motivational speech, say a few Jesus lines, and say, woo, I'm a linebacker, let's go. Nobody needs that. We need real economic solutions. We need people who know the economic arena, and that's not Ray Lewis. That's just not Ray Lewis. It's like
they're intentionally targeting these athletes and entertainers because they know that they know if they go to anybody else, it's going to be different. Especially people who are strong in their blackness and they words and they, like you said, in their education. It's like we're not going to fall for this. We're not. Like, I don't care that it's Jim Brown. Cool, Jim Brown, we understand what you did in the past. But the same thing, it's the same past y'all tried to get Bernie Sanders. Y'all try to make Bernie Sanders an honorary black man because he did something 50 years ago and ain't did nothing since. And I'm not saying Jim Brown hasn't done anything since then, but what I am saying is just because you have a past of doing things like you've done in the community don't mean that we can't side-eye you with the things that you're doing now. You're not immune to that.
Right now, if somebody call out, yo, Jay, man, I listen to y'all pod, man, sound like you got some good points, I want you to come talk up here at the White. Like, hell no, I ain't going, no, because I'm not bursting that, like, well enough. I'm not to that point where I can actually articulate what needs to happen. Yeah, I do know some stuff like everybody else. You know, I can handle myself in a conversation, but I know I'm not to that level to where I can go and address stuff at that type of national stage. Like, come on. And it's just like, why is he only meeting with football players and entertainers? Is that all we are in America?
Ego.
Athletes and
entertainers? The people with the egos. Like you just said, you're going to the people with the egos. Like, if they call us up and say, hey, all right, well, Joseph, well, we want you to come talk about economics in the black community. Pat, you need to go. That economics is not my strong point. That don't mean I don't know about economics, but I'm not. You shouldn't bring me on TV. Now, I ain't going to no CNN or nobody radio show talk about other than my lanes. I'm staying in my lanes.
But you know,
and that's the key thing. Go ahead, Pat.
But you know, that's where we get into celebrity worship, entertainment worship, and the fact that, you know, we know if Donald Trump really wanted to do something for black people, he's had the ability to do something long before now. We also know that the presidency is the last person in America. The president is the last person in America that can really do anything about local level systematic racial issues. So again, we know that if Donald Trump really wanted to do something, he was in a better position to do something before he became president. And now, you know, so anyways, not even going that deep into that point. We really need to look at this for what it is. One, they understand the community, and they understand that the community worships celebrities and entertainers, football players, jocks, athletes, period. They understand that we worship those people. And they understand that all it's going to take to get us on their side, per se, is you look at Hillary Clinton and got Mary J. Blige singing to her on the couch. What the hell kind of foolishness is that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. Who the hell is Mary J. Blige, really? Mary J. Blige can't even figure out how to have a healthy relationship.
Is it a gun? Is it a knife? Think for bro, that shit was classical, man. Y'all hate it.
I couldn't even stomach that, bro. I couldn't even stomach the 30-second Facebook commercial that I saw. Nah, bro. I did. Mary, you lost a whole lot of points with me on that. But that speaks to, you know, exactly what we're saying. Entertainment, celebrity, jock, athlete, celebrity worship, basically, because athletes become celebrities, entertainers become celebrities, and we worship anybody that comes on the magical speaking box.
Right.
I'll agree to that.
Right. I'm Ray Lewis, and you got to dig deep inside yourself to sell out. Selling out is not just getting deep. Selling out is deep within you. You got to go within you and say, I'm going to sell out, and then that's how I did it. That's what I did. I got passion. Whoa!
I'm a linebacker. Let's go. Nah, but I think that formula, though, that we got to get out of that, just sending our entertainers and stuff, that's not our top 10%. That's not like that's not it. We got real scholars out here that have been punching the concrete for years, and they can't even, you know, get heard on the national level, get a fair chance to speak on TV. But we're going to give it to Ray Lewis, the guy who beat murder charges by turning an informant. Like, no, you're not speaking for me. And if you are, I reject whatever's coming out of that situation. Now, And now, if it's something positive you can do, okay, do your thing, but don't speak for all of us, because there's actual people that can get change and things happening. But come on, what is Ray Lewis going to do? Offensive linebacker, somebody? Like, stop it, dude. Get your dumb ass back on TV.
And Nick, that goes to the entire culture when you think about it. I mean, it's not just black Americans. That's black people the world over. You look at, they got Ben Affleck speaking in front of Congress about the conditions in Africa.
Right.
Really? Ben
right.
Affleck? That's the best we could do for an entire continent is Ben Affleck. The dude who played a shitty Batman. That's where we going with
that's
this?
True. Yeah. He made Geely. He did make that movie.
So, I mean, that's just constantly how they interact with us. When it's something with another nation or another group of people, they find their foremost intellectuals. You know, they'll find a Noam Chomsky, or they'll find somebody else that's at the top of their field and can really just lay out the facts and really draw a picture. But when it comes to anything melanated, you know, we get the singers or the dancers. And if we do get somebody that's not a singer or a dancer, it's a white celebrity that knows even less than that. Like, you couldn't even find one of them African kids that y'all used to have on the commercials with the flies buzzing around their head.
Mm-hmm.
One of them that grown up by now. You couldn't invite them over to speak. You really been at. So, I mean, it just speaks to the entire culture of disrespect and the entire culture of them understanding what they're dealing with and us refusing to accept the fact that we do have scholars. We do have intellectuals. We are worth the books. We are worth the study. We are worth the intellectual effort that is going to require to understand us and get us back on our feet. We as a community need to stand up and say, why the fuck are you meeting with, okay, well, that's cool. You meet with Jim Brown. But we don't respect that. Like you can't bring us as a community anything out of that meeting. If all you met with was Jim Brown, Ray Lewis, and Reverend Hellon, like,
you ain't come out with nothing. Like, you have nothing significant for black people.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the three people you had at the table.
And Kanye West. We can't forget about Kanye West.
Man. Fresh off his breakdown, right?
Yeah, fresh off the
fresh off the breakdown. With the Odell Beckham in his head.
Which some people said, you know, that some people said he faked his breakdown for press, which I don't know.
Well, why you? If you still listening to Kanye, man, I feel for you. I'm sorry, I said it. Yep, if you still listening to Kanye, hey man, maybe
Kanye
you need to get a hobby. You need to get a hobby.
That's what happens when you start messing with Kardashians. Let that be a message to you fellas out there. Stop messing with these modified
man.
Women out here, these Kardashians.
Jamie,
they're gonna mess your head up.
Jamie, save your breath. Jamie, save your breath. You want to know why?
I'm telling you.
No, save. I'm for the, see, because, see, if you don't, you're going to work yourself up and you're going to be mad, because when you walk out your house tomorrow, you're going to see a black dude, a skinny black dude, with one of them oversized white women who can't do nothing for him, but that's just the woman he's staying with, because that's who he need to. So if those things keep happening, they're going to keep messing with them Kardashians.
Well, it is cold out, Joe. So,
no, they do it. No, it's Jamie.
Right
Jamie,
nope.
If it was May, and you know it, because one of them your cousins, because I got a cousin like that too.
Everybody got one, huh?
Everybody got one.
Oh man, that's funny.
But on a serious note, though, I mean, We have to stop trying to negotiate with people who don't have our best interests. We do not have to meet with Donald Trump to get our needs met. We have enough capable, knowledgeable, skilled people within the black community to take care of ourselves. It's about organizing as a unit. Instead of meeting with Donald Trump, meet with black people who about change, get together and meet. Well, you know what? Let Jim Brown know, because Jim Brown don't have our interest anyway. So the black people who really have our interest, let's organize. I'm calling out the black people. We're having to call out black people who want change. Let's connect. Let's organize. Contact us. Let's connect. Let's organize. Let's stop allowing this foolishness to rouse us up. Because if we're organizing, that doesn't matter. Let's organize.
And one last thing before we get off Jim Brown. And I had to say this because I remember this like yesterday. He went super hard on Kobe Bryant over that whole Shaq situation. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Yeah.
He called Kobe a sellout. He was just like, if I was meeting with black athletes right now, Kobe wouldn't be a part of it. He was raised in Europe. He doesn't know about this culture, this, that, and the other. That's the Jim Brown that I knew. Now, fast forward to now, those two different they don't even correlate. That doesn't go together. It doesn't make sense. So I just wanted to throw that perspective out there. He hated Kobe, but he over here, oh, I love Trump. That's my main man.
Like, it's like, so all the things that Trump have said about your people, it's cool because you like them now because y'all hung out.
Hey, when the Reverend calls you, the Reverend gave him a sermon in that office, and he came out all joyful and jubilated and everything happy, and Trump was it, man.
And see, that's just it. If Jim Brown, if that Reverend is any type of influence on any thought you have, anything else you do is discredited, because that guy's clearly a blithering idiot. And if you, Jim Brown, can't see that he's an idiot and a first-class sellout, you can't help us.
Not at all.
I don't understand why, like, for me, all of that boils down to why are y'all even, like, Reverend Rawlings wouldn't even have my number. And if he did have it, I wouldn't have no words for him when he called. Like a dude like that can't get me to come to a meeting. I'm unreachable to you. Like, so the mere fact that he was even able to contact y'all and get y'all to say okay to a meeting with Trump,
it's
for me, that's enough for me to
cause for concern.
Right there. Yeah, like, I'm
right.
Like, all right, I'm side-eyeing the hell off y'all just based off that. But then, okay, you can't even come home with so we talked about some issues in the community. Okay, well, what did y'all get out of the talk? Like, did y'all get any promises? Did y'all have any plans put forth? Did y'all, you know, like what happened behind that? So everything about it is questionable. But yeah, Jim Brown, definitely, I respect you for what you did. I respect you for what you stood for. But on this right here, you on some other stuff, bro. And David,
you on
your
own on this one.
You need to watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, David.
Well, okay, I'm glad. Look, all right, look. I don't have nothing against David Banner. But once again, David Banner is, at the end of the day, I'm not saying David Banner, he's an entertainer.
He's an entertainer, that's how he
don't
start.
I'm not saying he don't know nothing. But once again, if we're starting there, we're in trouble as a people. If that's where we're starting, because it's not like, let's not try to act like David Banner is a Claude Anderson or Dr. Amos Wilson. Let's dead that right now. We're also talking about somebody who's still coming into himself, coming into his own. Listening to him, like, as emotional as David Banner is, that let you know right there, he's still a baby in some of these aspects of growing. Like I tell this all the time, even though people like us to come out and talk and speak about the information that we know, I try to remind people, look, and I like to equate this to, in the ancient times, back in ancient Kemet, the if you was in the priesthood, you had to spend 40 years learning the knowledge. Like, you had to spend 40 years becoming a master of this knowledge before you can go out and teach. So we got people who are spending 2 and 3 and 5 years and watching all the Hidden Colors. Or you been in the Hidden Colors movie, now all of a sudden you are a master teacher. No, that's not it. Even like me, like, I like to talk, and I like to talk about what I know, but I'm not a master teacher. So don't follow me. Research what I say. Don't follow me. My job is not to make people to follow me. My job is to empower you to be a leader yourself. So we got to stop elevating these rappers and these entertainers and these athletes just because they, of course, David Banner speaks well. He's a rapper.
Now, let's for those that don't know, the reason I bring up David Banner is because David Banner said that calling Jim Brown a coon for his relationship with Trump was blasphemy. And all I'm saying to David Banner, not attacking him or anything like that, because I honestly think David Banner is doing his thing when it comes to waking people up and spreading knowledge.
Right, he's putting it down.
Definitely is. So I'm not taking anything away from that. But what I am saying is, when you're out in the front like that, you can't afford, especially with the community of people David Banner got following him. These aren't your rap fans, man. These people will drop you quickly. I'm saying this in your own best interest because a lot of your fan base is the conscious community. You better ask Pastor Ray Higgins what happens if you say the wrong thing. Using a strong word like blasphemy when you're talking about what's going on with Jim Brown right now, that's a bad look, fam. That is a bad, bad look. It is not blasphemy to say that Jim Brown is on some other stuff right now. I'm not going to go out and call him a coon, but if anybody else were to call him a coon, I'm not going to argue with them and tell them to shut up either, because right now, Jim Brown is on some other stuff.
Hey, man,
and
look.
Go ahead.
It's like if I walk in the crack house and I see the crack pipe in your hand and smoke coming from your mouth. I mean, and so it's kind of like, you know, we catching you, we're seeing him. We're seeing somebody who's iconic, who we know Jim Brown to put in work. We know that, but what you're doing now is countering everything else that you kind of stood for, Jim. History tells us that this would not end good for us. That's what history tells us. I'm not saying I know it all. I'm not saying I got all the information, but from the hundreds, and I do mean literally hundreds of stories that I've personally researched, we never come out on a winning end or a positive end of negotiating with Europeans. That's just simple. And when I say hundreds, I literally mean hundreds.
I agree with both you guys. You got to understand, like, I watched Ronald Martin's interview with Jim Brown, and he kind of let him off the hook. There's a certain level of respect built up. Even Tariq Nasheed, he was just like, you know, I'm not, you know, he didn't agree with it, you know, this, that, and the other, but, you know, he didn't really go in. You know, us younger generation, we're not as connected emotionally to a Jim Brown. So, it's a lot easier for me to say, call him out and be like, yo, this ain't cool. But for them, it's more of a respect thing versus what actually transpired and what happened. And I'm not saying that's okay. It's just I get it from their point of view, but they also got to understand, like, that's not a good look for us, period. You know, Jim Brown stood for something, and, you know, that image of him is, you know, reigns heavily on our minds, you know, this younger generation. But the stuff he's saying now, the rhetoric he's putting out now, that's just not cool. And they need to step up and say something, but I know that's not going to happen because they got a level of respect for him.
If you were the person who's going to go out on Front Street and try to drag Jim Brown's name through the mud, you wrong, and you need to be karate chopped in the face, because we will not disrespect Jim Brown, but we dang sure don't agree with what's going on right now. But it's like we have to learn how to tell the truth as well, and we have to learn how to hold people accountable for their actions, and we got to stop giving people passes based off of past merits. Even me, call me on my stuff. If I'm selling out, tell me I'm selling out.
Yeah, and we definitely need to be able to, because I have a level of reverence for Jim Brown as well. You know, raised my mom and my dad spoke very highly of Jim Brown, and,
right.
And you know, so the respect is there. But at the same time, to me, that's what makes him even more worthy of being called out, if you will. It's like watching the monument crumble. You know what I'm saying? You know, we should be pointing and doing what we can to make sure that that monument stays in its place. It'd be a different if Jim Brown was just like Pastor Rollins. It ain't no point in even attacking the Pastor Rollins because, like, nobody, he's not even going to be a footnote in history. But Jim Brown is probably going to be, according to some historians, when we, 100 years from now, people probably will still be talking about Jim Brown.
Right.
We'll probably still be, and not just the football player, but the activist. And the last thing we need is another Frederick Douglass situation where you put in all this work, and then when you get old, you marry a white woman, and now everybody's coming at you crazy.
Right. Right.
True indeed. That's a good way to sum up this Jim Brown. I think Pat killed that with that point. I have nothing else after that with that point, Pat. God damn.
Hey, man. Hey, well, you know what? Well, we're going to end it the same way we started it. There you go. All right, so I know we were talking about, I'm sure we've all seen enough of the Breakfast Club interview with Jamila LaRue and Amber Phillips when they're talking about the Nate Parker situation. And then a young lady said, she said the second leading cause of death for black women is black men. And as I was watching that, you should have seen like the screw face I had as she said that. Because, you know, I didn't know the stats off the top of my head, but I'm like, that don't sound right. So what are you guys' thoughts on that, and how do we counter things like that when we have people of our community who seem to who on the surface seem to be of our community but are putting you got damaging rhetoric? What y'all thoughts on that? Where we go from there on that?
You wanna go, Pat? I go. What's up?
You
up?
Go ahead, John.
Chris
go
Crawford.
Ahead.
All right. So when I first heard that, I was just taken away that Charlamagne even let that slide, because Charlamagne's the type of dude that'll go in on stuff, and I think he gave them a pass in this particular instance. But when you really look at the facts, what they're saying is very deceiving. So, yes, between certain demographics in African-American females, homicide is the second leading cause of death. But you actually have to go in and break that down as homicide. Because homicide, does that mean just dudes killing you? You get what I'm saying? So the way she said it, and she purposely said it that way because her friend, the other one, she reinforced, like, look it up, sources. They didn't break down the information enough and actually give the information in proper context.
Well,
and
what,
the fact that they – well, go ahead.
Well, my bad. Just to be clear, she said black men were the second leading cause of death of black women, not just homicide, but black men.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at. Like, homicide is the second leading cause. She doesn't know what the percentage is for black men. She doesn't know that. And so she purposely said that for a reason. And that's the problem with a lot of these black feminists. They'll take a piece of information and they're completely twisted. And why she, in the same sentence, oh, we love our black men. We here to support you. But but she didn't give the information out properly. So when a female hears that or something like that, they're easily going to attach on to that. When you actually look at the numbers, homicide is the second leading cause. Now, when you break down homicide, there's so many different ways it can be god dang on. Kidnapping, it doesn't necessarily mean a black man assaulting a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the percentage of that, that's going to be even smaller. So she didn't put it in proper context, and that type of rhetoric is dangerous. You can't say you're looking out for the black man, you support the black man, you love the black man, but just categorize all of us as the second leading cause of death for black women. That's just extremely reckless and dangerous,
right.
And she knows better. But she did that purposefully. And to me, not for them not to be called out on that, and for people not to even understand that, hey, those numbers don't even add up. Like, chill, what are you talking about? It blew my mind. And, like, that black, like, I love my black women. I'm married to a black woman. I got two beautiful black daughters, two little goddesses in here. I love black women. The key thing about that feminist movement is not about black women. And the black women got to say, oh, we started this. No, you didn't. You came and you attached yourself on to an already moving feminist women where white women were going against their white men. Anything that puts the black man and the white woman, the black man and the black woman at odds, I'm completely against. So this whole feminist thing, if it puts you against me and me against you, I can't rock with it, man. That comment was so dangerous, and she should literally be ashamed of herself.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, to me, I liken it to if we were to go out and say the second leading murderer of black men were black women. You know,
right.
You know,
we get attacked.
Right. We would get blazed, and everybody would quickly drill down into that statistic. If we would have said black women are more likely to kill black men than anybody but black men, people would drill down into that statistic. They would find the context. They would find the proper everything, and then they would basically rationalize it away the way it should be rationalized away. And the same thing should be done for comments like those. Now, I think Charlamagne didn't call her on it because I don't think Charlamagne knows enough of the facts. Charlamagne is good at smelling bullshit. I will give him that. But when you can cover your bullshit as well as some of these people can by hiding them, you know, I find that people that spit bullshit sources are quick to tell you to look it up without giving you anywhere to go to look it up, because they know just by saying that, they add a bit of credibility to their statement. Oh, well, they told me to look it up, so if they knew I was going to look it up and find out that they was lying, then they would have never said that. You know, so I just don't give it a whole lot of credence, but that this blatant attack that these women have launched on black men, it really needs to stop. And everybody keeps drawing attention to the fact that, well, black women are always attacking black men, and black women are black men are always attacking black women, and black men are always doing this, and black men are always doing that. Where do we ever really have the platforms to match them on the level or the magnitude that they are on? It's almost like a one-sided discussion. You know, we have to tell people everybody's tired of everybody, just like you tired of black men. The 25 or 30% of black men that you see that make above six figures married to a white woman, and you ignore the other 70% that are married to a black woman. And just like you zoom in and see those few black men that say crazy stuff about black women, and you ignore the mass majority of black men who love black women. And just like you will read you'll read and misinterpret census data that talks about single parent households and this, that, and the third, and not pay attention to a CDC report that says that black men are more likely to be active fathers than any other man in the country. You know, just like all of those things get seen and you'll focus in on those negatives and it'll make you upset, it's the same thing happening for black men on the other side. We see the websites like the Madame Nori, the Four Harriets, all of these reckless-ass black feminists, the girls that hung the sign up over the Atlanta highway talking about we are no longer going to support black men. And we see all of that, and we get frustrated as well. And just like we're forced to ignore the fringes because we can't fire back at black women, because then you're actually seen as attacking and the entire community will come down on you, as well they should. But just like we see all that and we get frustrated with it and we feel the urge to fire back and this, that, and the third, like nobody gives us credit for absorbing all of that. Nobody. Right. They all say, right, you need to just check these men. Okay, we are checking those men. Well, you need to do this. Well, we are doing that. Well, you need to do this. Well, we are doing that too. Okay, so who's checking the women? Where is the large black woman group out there that's putting these crazy women in place for saying, no, hold on, we're not going to... Like, where is that group? Because I can point to 15, 16, I can point to 20 groups right now, black men groups, that are out there mentoring, are otherwise combating that I hate black men rhetoric that largely is coming from a white media, or that I hate black woman rhetoric, I'm sorry.
Right.
That largely is being promoted in a white media. But where are the groups that are attacking, and I'm not saying they aren't out there, I'm just asking, can somebody please point me to one?
Man, look.
That's a good point.
Charlemagne, the reason Charlemagne did not jump on that is because when the interview first started, they were digging in his ass for his Tommy Lawrence situation, for hanging out with Tommy and trying to be friends with Tommy and trying to bring her into the black world. Well, we're going to get on that secondly. But I personally, like, when I was looking at the interview, when she said, like I said, I got the screw face, so I paused it and went to Google. So one of the first websites I landed on was CDC, because to find stats like that, it's like, you know, those are, like, I pay, like, at my job with the health department here, like, my coworker with surveillance, I pay attention to surveillance. So you would never have, like, current stats, like, the stats that will show the homicide rate for like a large group of like black women across the nation and stuff, it would not be current like 2016 stats. Like, you're not gonna get 2016 stats to 2019. So we still working with like 2013 stats, right? So I'm saying that because a lot of people don't understand when they go to these certain places and they're looking for mass stats like that, and they wonder why it be years behind, because it takes time to compile these stats, right? So when we're looking at leading causes of death by age group of black females in the United States, and it's 2013, so it's the latest one. And this is CDC.gov, and we know the CDC has a history of CDC not our friend. So the CDC will put out something that can twist people's mindset against us real quick. But the CDC is saying, from what I'm looking at right here in front of me, and you can go to CDC.gov for yourself, it says this. Homicide is the second leading cause of death for black women in these three age groups. Ages 1 to 4 is 14.8%. Ages 15 to 19 is 16%. And ages 20 to 24 is 17.3%. Other than that, it's cancer, heart disease, cancer, heart disease, cancer. So, and like Jamie said earlier, when we're talking about breaking down homicide, well, how could, first of all, if we try to, let's say if we're talking about homicide rates or black men killing black women, so from these stats, if we're just looking at, all right, so where's homicide and what age group? So now our sample size won't go for all black women. It'll go for ages 1 to 24. So that's a whole new sample size right there. That's a whole new study we got to do, because we got to see the homicide rates, and then out of those homicides, which one of those are black men, as Jamie pointed out earlier, right? So, all right, so Ebony, let's go to Ebony.com, Ebony magazine, right? So just scrolling through Ebony, and the three leading causes according to Ebony, these articles in Ebony, is heart disease, cancer, and HIV/AIDS. So when the young lady is saying, and I'm not saying that these two are these sources, but these are two sources that I found, well, these two that I have up, and I looked at other sources, and I'm not seeing any sources that's validating what the young lady is saying, that black men themselves, like as a group, black men are the second leading cause of death for black women. And people, you have to learn how to research information. You have to learn how to, like, when you're watching YouTube, pause that thing and go to Google and research, because when they ask you, especially when somebody asks you for your sources and they can't give you a specific source, like, it's one thing to say I forgot my source, but I tried to get that to you. That's cool. I can take that. But when you just take sources, or go look it up for yourself, or I'm not gonna do your research for you, that lets me know you don't know your source. You're just pulling that out your butt. You got to be, because if you know your source, you cite your source. And so we're talking about dangerous rhetoric, because you can't go around saying black men are the second leading cause of death against black women, and then you can't substantiate that with no evidence or no information. You can't even tell me what website to go to. That's sloppy. That's reckless. That's like positive thought wasn't even put. You can't say that in one light and then in another light say, oh, we're here for you, black men. We love black men. We're rioters for you. Like, people who love each other don't do that to each other. We just don't. I mean, and look, like, black women who are feminists. Look, Stop putting your gender before your race. You're the only ones who are doing that. You're the only ones who are putting your gender before your race. White women do not care about you.
Well, we
these white women who you feel like aligned with you, they just showed you.
Joe, save your breath, because they just got showed that with this last election to Trump, because they damn sure picked white man over white woman. So it's clear that their race is secondary. So you might as well save your breath on that. I don't even bother talking to hardcore black feminists, to be honest. I treat them the same way I treat white supremacists or unreasonable white people, period, because you can't reach them with rationale. No matter how many facts and statistics, and I'm not talking all black feminists, because I have a couple friends that are black feminists. They're in that
line. They're not real feminists. Range. They ain't real feminists. They like humans.
Well,
they ride for human beings.
Well, we say that, but they declare themselves as feminists. So if you want to call yourself, I'm gonna call you what you want to be called. So they call themselves feminists and they black. So you know, and we have discussions all the time. And I can show them facts, figures, and statistics and get them to see things from a new perspective, just like they've shown me facts, figures, and statistics that have changed my perception on a couple things. But these hardcore, like these people that are going out on these shows and all these other things, my experience, you can't reach people like that. I mean, that's like when everybody's singing a song about domestic violence. And one of the last reports I looked at, granted it was a few years old, so the data could be changed, but from the Center for Domestic Violence Prevention was that black men get abused more than any other man in the country, and
of
black
course.
Women get abused more than any other woman in the country. So if we are really breaking things down and looking at our situation as a people, we are both fucking each other up at alarming rates.
That's true.
So why are we zeroing in on a gender-specific side of the issue when we need to be tackling the issue in its entirety? It means nothing if men stop beating on women, if women are still beating on and emotionally abusing men. You still have a dysfunctional community.
Right.
Here's my thing about black feminism, and maybe I need to talk to a feminist personally, a black feminist, but who's holding them back? You know, they say, they're going against the black man. And this, but black men aren't the ones holding them back. I read an article that said black women are one of the second most highly educated demographics in America. So who's holding them back? Like, it's not your fight isn't with black men. It's against what we've all been fighting for all this time, which is white supremacy. So it's like I don't get black feminism, because black men aren't saying, oh, don't go. Black women, I see black women doctors, everything. Nobody's holding them back from going out, getting their education, and striving to higher points. Who's holding them back?
But come on, let's be real. All three of us have achieved levels of professionalism in our life, and we all know the higher you go up, the more you achieve, the more you see women, the less you see men. Let's be real, especially in our community, in the black community. The more successful you are, the more women you're around, the more black women you're around, the less men you're around. So like you said, black men aren't holding black women back.
But you got to look at the entire narrative when you get into that discussion, because that also bleeds into the narrative that black men find financially stable women with great financial economic offense as intimidating, or you know, all this other bullshit about black men don't marry black women, which when you dig into those statistics again, you find one, that they're talking about a specific age range, college age, they're talking about when they say black women aren't getting married. For a lot of those reports, they aren't talking about all black women aren't getting married. They're merely looking at the fact that I think one of the numbers is 70% of black women between the ages of 18 and I think it's 25 or 29 have never been married. Well, that
Duh.
Is, you know, like that's, but then they like to compare that to other communities where the number is a lot lower without considering all of the other things going on. But then when you look at the total picture, you find out that the majority of black women will get married at some point in their lives, and the overwhelming majority of them will marry a black man. But that narrative gets bled out by the narrative that black men aren't attracted to financially stable black women. Cool. So then you go into that, and they start interviewing all of these single, lonely, high-ranking black women, and they all sing the same song. Well, I guess I just intimidate men when they never dig into, okay, why is she lonely? Is it her personality? Is it that she put work before family? Is it, they never dig into those angles. And then on top of that, they never interview the plethora. And when I say plethora, I really mean the absolutely large amount of financially stable black women that are happily married. I can name you 10 or 15 right now in my own circle. And that's just one person. So yeah. I know
a lot of black.
In my circle of financially stable black women, I'm going to say this and shut up. I know 4 or 5 that are single. And I know about 15 or 20 that are either engaged in a long-term relationship or married.
Right. Most of the girls that I grew up with, like elementary, middle, high school, are married or engaged. They are. Two black men.
To continue the feminist agenda, you have to completely ignore that, and you have to make it seem that black men are holding black women back. Like my wife. She's college educated. I just you can't get no education. Hell no. Go get a master's degree. Go get all this. Hey, we're gonna be caked up over here. Let's do it. Like nobody's holding them back.
I know a whole we all know a whole population of black men who are looking for black women like that. It's a whole bunch of black men who are looking for successful black women.
Most of the black men I know are looking for. When my wife told me she wanted to go get her master's in nursing, every time she say it, go, please go. Like what kind of an immature, assholish boy do you have to be to not want your woman to be more successful? Like what kind of, and if those are the types of dudes you're running into, then we don't need to be talking about feminism or misogyny or anything like that. We need to be talking about you to figure out what the hell you're doing to attract these little-ass boys in your life. Because grown men don't think like that.
Because I think everybody, like, you know, I wasn't always who I was. And at some point when I was out there single running the streets, I attracted what I was. And so I started stepping my game up. Then I started attracting, you know, females who had, you know, college-educated doctors, reporter, you know, stuff like that. But if you're attracting that, then you kind of got to, you know, hey, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing this? Because I hate that narrative there's no good men out there. There's plenty of good brothers out there. It's just you got this laundry list of certifications and criteria. Motherfucker got to be Idris Elba just to get a goddamn date. Like, yo, chill the fuck out. There's good people out there. Get over your ego and what everything you want. Everybody doesn't fit this little, I don't know, that's going into dating advice. Anyway, the feminist thing, black men are not holding black women back. Now, there are some bum-ass dudes out there. Don't get it wrong. There's some straight bum-ass dudes who would rather get you pregnant and not let you be nothing in life. I know that. I've seen bum-ass dudes who get you pregnant and leave you and go start another family. So there are bum-ass dudes out there. But that is a small percentage of black men. Stop generalizing us all for your project cousin that's doing this nonsense. Like, that's not all of us.
That doesn't even represent.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying represent a large percentage of that is. That's a small fraction of black men, but we all get generalized, and part of that is media and stuff like that. Everybody thinks black dads just run out on their kids and X, Y, and Z. So I get it, but reality is that's not the truth. There's an overwhelming large percentage of black men who got their stuff together that are ready for those type of responsibilities. And if they aren't, then stop messing with them. Women control so much. I'm telling you right now, if women say, hey, all women got together and said, hey, we ain't messing with these dudes unless they got bachelor's degrees, I guarantee you dudes would be lined up at colleges tomorrow.
Of course.
Putting in applications. But like, I'm telling you right now, my wife said, hey, babe, I'm cutting you off unless this, hey, all right. You know, I might be stubborn for a day or two, but I guarantee you it'll get done. Like, come on, like, and that's what I'm saying. Black women, black men, real black men are not against you. We want to see you prosper.
But that's where we go into the narrative again of how they're. I even see the narrative of how, because I don't give you credit, because as a community, what do black men own and control that we can lock black women out of? That's the big question. If you want to say that we're oppressing you, we're not making hiring decisions. We're not owning these companies. You know, last report I read from the Small Business Administration said there's, I want to say 66% of new businesses was started by black women in the black community. We're not, like, black men are literally not in a position to prevent black women. You guys are having, okay, you want to say you got an issue with misogyny? Cool. We got an issue with misogyny, too, because these white men are running the fuck out of us as well. You know, so I just think we got to, but even to the overall narrative, the way they talk about it, like even the way they misread statistics, they try to forge this wedge between black men and black women that isn't even there. When you talk about black women being the most educated, that statistic that went flying around, that really, if you really look at it, that statistic was talking about enrollment numbers. Black women were enrolling that specific year, had enrolled at a higher number than any other group of people. But then when you look at attainment numbers for that same year, they did not attain more degrees than anybody else. So you can't call them the most educated because they didn't get the most degrees. So in essence, you have a bunch of women who enrolled in the college and then dropped out before they got their degrees. But we couldn't even analyze why they dropped out of college because we rolled with the statistic that the narrative gave us of saying that they were the most educated group on the planet, which means an entire section of problems gets glossed over. And then when you reflect that back on the man, you still have that bullshit statistic going around that more men are incarcerated or in justice custody than are in prison. And we all know that to not be true. So when you compare the two, you have this narrative that is just completely false on both sides and builds this huge wedge. Because now you're saying black women are super educated and black men are super dumb. And that's just not the case at all. And I look at the way the narratives are played to place us against each other at every single turn. Like, unemployment is another one. Where they'll talk about the unemployment of the black male, a lot of young black teenagers, and this, that, and the third. But then they show you all these shining examples of black women who are doing extremely well, and that's normally how they play it. Black women doing well, black men doing bad. But when you look at the numbers from the Bureau of Labor, that their statistics show that there is only, I believe it's a 3% difference between unemployment between black men and black women. So black men are unemployed, but black women are just as unemployed. So even in terms of the pay gap, you know, white women make more money than black men do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you mm-hmm. for saying that. Because I mm-hmm. said that to somebody. I was talking about affirmative action. And I was like, hey, affirmative action benefits white women more than it benefits black people, period.
Oh, yeah.
And these black women, they're like thinking we're against them, but at the end of the day, white women make more than your black man. So you think they're just going to elevate you to the point where they're at? Hell no.
White women make more money than you and quiet about it, and they ain't even going to say nothing about it.
Right.
And not even helping
you
ass
being
get
broke
to their point.
To further their agenda.
Right. They not. I mean, it's. Well, another part of that interview that got me is when the young ladies were saying that basically Nate Parker should apologize for being falsely accused for rape and should become a advocate for violence against women. Now, as an advocate for violence against women, I strongly disagree. You how can you make somebody who's been proven, a black man who was accused of raping a white woman, who was found not guilty by all white jury in Pennsylvania, and you're going to make this man years later, over a decade later, come back and try to apologize for something he was found not guilty for because you feel like he should do, and now you're going to try to make him an activist? No. I'm the activist. We use this platform for this show. We're the activists. There's other men out there activists. You got Men Can Stop Rape. You got a call to men, two of the most prominent organizations in the United States that men go out and advocate for violence against women. There are plenty of men out there to do these things, but you can't try to make Nate Parker do what you feel like he should do because you feel like he should do it because you fight for women. Because these women, they're not interested in stopping violence. They're only interested in stopping violence against women. They don't care about women being violent against men. They don't care about none of the others. They only care about violence against women. And to me, they're the fake activists because as an activist, an advocate against sexual and domestic violence, and yes, I know I say violence against women, but I'm always talking to women about not being violent against men. It has to go both ways. But you can't make somebody an activist, and you can't. Nate Parker does not owe anybody anything. He doesn't owe black women an apology. He doesn't owe women an apology. He doesn't owe feminists an apology. He doesn't owe sexual assault or domestic violence survivors apology. He doesn't owe people that. He was found not guilty. Now, if you don't want to support Nat Turner because of Nate Parker, that's you. But Nate Parker don't have to go on no tour, on no Mike Vick apology tour for something he was found not guilty for. If you have other information to prove that he was guilty, well, let me know, because where you got your information from?
In one parallel to that, I didn't see the white feminist community go at that Stanford rapist as
right.
hard as they went at Nate Parker.
It's been at least three instances. You just had a white man who raped the baby and got like 30 days or no jail time. It's been at least three or four instances since that, and the white women haven't said anything. Black women haven't said anything about those men either.
I just thought that was like a horrible parallel, because, I mean, here's a whole university. Here's a judge that pretty much slapped him on the wrist, and this kid got out in 6 months. And the white feminist community, they were pretty silent on that. You know, you had the few ones that would speak out, but the vast majority didn't say a thing because the system worked out to an advantage of that young white male. But they didn't say anything. So where were the black feminists when that happened? So to
right.
me, that outrage against Nate Parker, man, it's like, come on, we don't believe you. You need more people. Like, stop it.
Right. But that's real, though. I mean, that's real. I mean, you can't. Like, they have tunnel vision. These women have tunnel vision, and some of them are still reliving their attacks, their assaults. They're still reliving them. So you have some women. It doesn't matter what the evidence is. That man is guilty because that lady is deciding to relive her assault. And see, that's a whole other aspect of healing that she has to go through. But you can't, like, Nate Parker don't owe us anything. He doesn't. Like, I mean, like, if you take one of those women and you accuse them of stealing, and then the woman is found not guilty, we just talking about stealing, and you ask her to apologize for being found not guilty, I guarantee you she won't do it.
That's true.
But you're going to ask this man to apologize for being found not guilty for rape because you're an advocate?
No, this is what they'll do, Joe. They're gonna say this is how they're gonna get you with some, like, they're gonna get you on this right here. They say it wasn't found not guilty, you were acquitted. That's not an admission of not being. That's exactly what they're gonna get you on. So stop saying not guilty, say acquitted.
Find the information to prove that he's guilty. Present the information to prove that he's guilty. What did you find that the courts didn't find? Or did you have a private investigator?
I mean, but Joe, this is just another example of them putting gender above race. Because
right. My
thing is, even if, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm not a fan of dudes calling their boys over to have sex with.
Nah, that's a whole nother
lane.
Right,
I'm just saying. I'm not a fan of none of the stuff that went down. But the fact remains, as a black woman, with all of the atrocities that your community and you yourself has experienced, I mean, there was a cop that was just recently convicted of multiple counts of rape, found out he was just going through the community raping black women. You know, there have been books written by rapists that have openly said that they first perfected their craft of raping people on black women because they knew nobody cared. You know, like, all of the things that we've gone through as a race, I just don't understand how you can feel insulted and hurt if you're truly about your people because a black man was accused of raping a white woman. I could see if she was a black woman. I could really, and I know motherfuckers be like, we can't make everything about race, but, you know, race is involved in everything, so I'm sorry, we got to do that. But I just don't understand, like, how they could be so emotionally attached to this white woman when I just, even when I try to understand it, the only thing that comes to mind is that they're putting gender above race. And I don't really understand that because I don't do that either. Like, I don't put me being a man, like, I don't walk up to people and they'd be like, hey, Patrick, what are you? Yeah, I'm a male that happens to be black. And no, I don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm a black man, and I say it that way for a reason. Black comes first.
Right.
Well, Pat, you got to respect people. Some people are transracial. I just came out as a 30-year-old white guy, so you have to respect my transracial identity.
That's
just so
true.
You know.
That
man, we got a long way to go. Like, we have a long way to go because we're in this race, and we keep shooting ourselves in the foot in this race for land and resources and survival on this planet with these savages that we're competing against. But black people, we seem to always find a way to hinder ourselves. We seem to always find a way to look out for self-interest and not look out for the whole of the group. Because the topics we're talking about today with Jim Brown and then these young ladies coming on the Breakfast Club talking about these issues, we're not saying that there isn't a sexual assault issue in our community. We know it is, but another thing we're saying is just that because there are sexual assault issues in our community doesn't mean that every man that's accused is guilty. That doesn't mean that I know the stats. If 15 women are raped, maybe one dude will be at least charged, maybe. But we can't say that every time a woman or a man is accused of rape that it's true. We can't say that. And if we do, then we're not doing our due diligence. We're not doing our community justice. But and I feel like a lot of times we're still having a lot of these issues because we're not focusing on the real truth. Like, we got to teach men to have emotional control. Teach women to have emotional control. It's not okay for a man to put his hand on a woman at any cost. It's not okay for a woman to put her hands on a man at any cost. Like, it's just unacceptable for us to be talking down on each other. It's unacceptable for each group, for each gender, to call each other out our names. It's unacceptable across the board. We have to learn how to harmonize from both sides. We need each other. Black women, we need you. You need us. We have to work together as a unit. And until we start doing that, we're still going to be here running around in a circle chasing our tails because everybody's in silos and we haven't agreed as a people to work together to be on one accord. And until we do that, we messed up.
Agreed.
Yep, definitely. And that's, I mean, I'm with you. We definitely need to understand that we're in this together, and you can't fix a community issue by going at it one side hard and leaving it. Like, it has to be a total solution. You know, if you want to stop raping the community, that needs to be worked on from both sides. More heavily handed on the male side, of course,
right,
because the men are the ones doing the raping. But it needs to be worked on from both sides, even in terms of women and how they
culture
interact with their sons
Right, culture.
Right, the entire culture has to change, and no culture stands in a vacuum. Male culture does not operate independent of the larger culture. So if there is a misogynistic rape culture going on in America, then we need to address the fact that not only is there a problem in the way males are raised and the way males are taught what manhood is, but there's also a level of female culture that is encouraging and that is grooming that culture. And we need to be able to understand and recognize both sides of the equations. Everything is interdependent. If one side is broken, the other side is broken. If you fix one side but don't fix the other side, then the problems are going to manifest themselves in another way, in another form of imbalance. So, you know, we got to get to that point where it's not, we're not attacking men and we aren't attacking women. We're attacking the problem, and we're attacking it as a collective.
And black people, remember, we have everything we need to be self-sufficient. We don't have to go outside of our community and meet with people like Trump and others to get our needs met. We don't have to do that. And like we are more than capable of taking care of ourselves. We are brilliant and innovative, creative people. Like a lot of our brilliance comes from some of the most trying times here in this country and in the world, but you still had us being as creative as we can be, inventing things, coming up with new things, like finding a way to survive all these things. We don't need other people to help us be great. We have that within ourselves. We have enough of us. There are too many brilliant black people walking around. Like you can literally give a crackhead spare parts and turn your back, turn around, and he'd have built the car. But that's brilliance. That's brilliance. We don't need other people to help us reach our goals. So let's stop reaching outside of our community and start looking at ourselves. Organization is the key. Unity and organization is our key. And until we get to that, we're going to be messed up.
True. Oh, man, I was going to say something, but I would have been a jab, and I've been trying to be on my best behavior this whole time, so I'm going to keep it to myself.
We
always talk about an economic base for the black community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Economic base. If you, I'm going to get so much shit for this, but you can go to any struggling black community around the nation, right? You know what you're going to find in that community that's thriving?
What's that?
A church.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
Oh, I don't even want to say, Joe. I don't even want to say.
Okay.
So you're saying we have the resources? We have an economic base. We do. It's been sitting there for a decade, and you've been paying into it for years, and it's sitting right there in your poor, underwhelming-ass community. Just wanted to throw that out there. I thought that would be kind of a little knife in somebody's back, but fuck it.
I mean, we know the churches and the communities ain't doing nothing, man. Come on, anybody who's still trying to deny that these churches and these communities ain't helping these communities, you lying to yourself. You live in these communities. You're not for your community. You don't care about your community. If you sit there and turn a blind eye to the bull that's going on in your communities, both of y'all come to Tallahassee right now. And we can go through the communities and count the churches. Like one Houghton Street and Saxon Street. We can go down Houghton and back up Saxon. I did a short section of that hood last week, and I counted at least 8 churches that were less than 1 mile. Like I'm talking about across the street, down the street, across the street from each other. Like we have there's a house, there's a church that's in the house right across the street from a church that's down the street from the church that's around on the back side of the street of a church that's down the street from 2 more churches that's down the street from another church.
Now, the reason I said that, you know, that self-sufficiency, I was reading, who was I reading? I think it was Dr. Claude Anderson. I was reading him. We're talking about economic bases in communities. You know, we got to build businesses. And I was just thinking, like, man, all that money that come through a lot of these little mega churches and this, that, and the other, what if they reinvested that money into the actual community instead of buying buildings and doing a bunch of nonsense? What if they actually put that money into hiring their own people? Hiring, you know, I just went off on a tangent.
They are not for us.
That's another show. It's Christmas, Joe. Have a goddamn heart. Fucking A, man.
Hey, man, you trying to get people to compromise their 501c3s. What's wrong with you?
Have a damn heart, Joseph. Go drink some eggnog and tickle your sack or something, man. Have a heart.
Uh-oh. Hey, man, should black people meet with Donald Trump? No. But, hey. Hey, man, but you know, man, you know how it goes. Hey, listeners, man, December 25th, On the Soldier Giants African History Curriculum app will be available. Make sure you visit www.ontheshoulders1.com to get your app and download it. Over 100 quizzes, over 100 profiles are on there, over 500 questions. You'll be there learning all day. You'll get to learn more about the heroes that are profiled within the app. Make sure you also, while you're on the website, get a copy of my book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. It's going down. I like to talk. Like I said earlier, I like to talk. So you can book me for speaking engagements. I come out and I teach some African history. I motivate you while I teach you, get you ready, because that's my thing. I want to get you pumped up, but I want you to learn something, practical information that you can use. So visit my website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. Make sure you visit WAUWhataboutus.com and support the Independence Day Project by Professor Carl Tone Jones. Myself and Patrick Irvin are two people of the panelists that are in the movie, that are profiled, that are speaking about the issues in the community. So make sure y'all support the Independence Day Project, because it's Dr. Carl Tone Jones' vision for black independence. So we're all given our vision, the blueprints, plans that black people can use so we can start working toward our independent black community. And when we're talking about an independent black community, a lot of people think about Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street wasn't necessarily an independent black community that we think about. We thinking above and beyond, where we're a nation inside of a nation. And that's above Black Wall Street. Make sure y'all visit www.paxinc.org to learn more about PAX Inc. We have a calendar that's going to be coming out soon, and within the calendar is highlighting our codes of conduct. Please go to the website, paxinc.org, click on the codes tab so you can learn our codes of conduct. We created Black Codes of Social Engineering, so black people can start to operating and existing differently and existing as a whole, as a continuous unit, rather than in any silos. Visit blackpreservation.org and support the National NAPAC, the National Association for
Association for the Preservation of History and Culture.
There you go. The National Association for the Preservation of African History and Culture. Visit blackpreservation.org. The Latre Hollinger is a young brother who's been working hard to preserve our historic landmarks throughout the nation. So please support him. He got a lot of projects coming up, a lot of ideas. Support the brother. So visit freedomtrainradio.com. Support us. We're going to continue putting information out. We're going to continue interviewing people, rolling into 2017, doing our thing. We here, man. We here for the people. Anything y'all want to get off y'all chest before we wrap this up?
Happy holidays, everybody. Enjoy the holiday break. Get some eggnog and brandy and have a great holiday spirit.
No, I'm talking about. Hey, man. Go ahead.
This is a dick move. Actually, research the history of Christmas, people, while y'all at it. Just do that. That'd be awesome.
What do the lonely do for Christmas?
Hey, I'm just saying, you know, research it. You know, see exactly where the holiday originated from. That'd be pretty awesome. It'd be a learning environment.
You're going to be like that one video I seen earlier where that lady was mad because people were teaching their kids that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny one, the Easter Bunny wasn't real, and she thought y'all were horrible parents for teaching y'all kids that the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus ain't real when you still believe that if you step on the crack, you're going to break your mama back.
Hey, that's a fact, man. Don't speak like that about my mom, Joe.
Hey, man, with that being said, we'll see y'all next week, because that's crazy. Peace.